All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
A choice right now, between fear and love. Sister Ron.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
I'm so excited because I was the first interview that anybody did to me was you, man.
See, I love that. All right, let's kick it off. Well, let's do now. This is our third one technically because we did have a hangout. And I'm going to link all this stuff down in the show description. But guys, welcome back, Jose Miguel Perez Gomez. So cool to see you, brother. There's so much to talk about. First and foremost, congratulations on your recent feature in National Geographic, and it's actually featured in a bunch of other cool places, guys, but this is the most notable for us in the U.S. I will, of course, recommend that you guys go check out the January-February edition of this publication here. Check out your boy. There's an adorable video of Yokai, my dog, and I going to Barnes & Noble to go pick this thing up together. And it was an awesome little adventure, and I'm so proud of you, man. I was looking at these pictures going, oh my God, we showed these on the show, and like you just said, we're the first folks that said, hey, man, come on the show and talk to us about your work, which we found you through Ben Tejada Ingram, which we will also shout out here with his two works. Love this guy. We found out about you, of course, in The Last Dinosaur of the Lost World, My Search for Little Nessie, and then his The Lands Forgotten by Time, his second book. Absolutely incredible. So shout out to Ben Tejada Ingram for introducing us and continuing this amazing work. But like I said, on continuing amazing work, congratulations in your feature. We have a bunch of things pulled up here that we are very excited to share with the audience. So I will go ahead and recommend that the audio only audience check out the video version down in the show description. It's going to get you to the video version of this show completely free and ad free over on Patreon. Don't even need to sign up. But if you want to support your favorite show, that's where you do it. But we are very excited to do this. So, Jose Miguel, how have you been, brother? What have you been up to?
Well, thank you very much for having me again in your program. It's an honor to be and meet with your audience again. And I send a big hug to all of them. Well, we have been working. The country situation here is very, very complex. So to work here, it takes you not two times, but at least three or four times more effort to move around, to get support in terms of logistics, to arrange expeditions, especially to the southern part of the country where, you know, getting fuel or getting airplanes or helicopter are really, really complex. We have the guerrillas in because there is a lot of illegal mining for gold and diamonds in the area. So it's a very complex to work in that particular area. But we have been doing it since the last 15 years. We have been exploring this particular huge area, which has the size of Belgium. It's larger than Israel or any other smaller countries, El Salvador, for instance. I mean, it's a very, very huge area. So it takes a long time to walk it and to explore it. But we have been making very nice discoveries, as you can see. And we have been, taking some international reactions from distinct scientific portals and magazines, and we've been having interviews all over the place, and we're moving on, and this is fascinating because it's we have 15 years already working it, but this is just the start.
That's so exciting. I'm just so proud of you because, yes, and guys, let's go ahead and do this. We're going to go ahead and share screen over here so that you can check out some of the work that he has gotten, some updates that we have here. And want to remind everybody also that all of these things that I'm showing here are going to be linked down in the show description so that you guys can check it out for yourself. Highly recommend checking out his organization's page here. This is where you can go fund and help his research. Help him pay for, you know, helicopters, guys. And if anybody knows of anyone who wants to donate a helicopter or, you know, needs to get rid of one, he's probably looking. So want to just invite you to walk us through your page here because you've got a lot of amazing stuff going on.
Yeah, this is the webpage of our foundation. This is a U.S.-based foundation, and you can check on it and see some of the projects we have. The Canaima Archaeological Project is only one of the at least seven projects we're managing right now. And this is all brand new. I mean, this is all really new projects. They're using latest technology. We use radar satellites in order to explore the land and detect features that otherwise would never be possible to realize they're there. And we're discovering new places such as that mountain that you're looking there. That particular mountain there that you see on the picture is the Tamacuari Peak. That is between the border of Brazil and Venezuela. That's a huge granitic mountain of at least 2,400 meters high. It's all granitic. It's unexplored, absolutely unexplored. And we have been finding there traces of a lost group of Amerindians that we are studying right now. But the most fascinating thing about this place is that nobody ever seen it. This is probably the first color picture you have about this mountain. And that tower is huge, over a kilometer. This is higher than Yosemite, some of the largest Captain Knows or other places there. This is huge, never been climbed. So I invite some climbers if they want to take a chance to climb it. But the most fascinating thing about this mountain is that all the species that we will be looking there at some point, they're going to be new to science because of the particular conditions. In the middle of the jungle with the winds and the weather, this produces distinct types of species of all kinds. Let's say insects, birds, frogs, whatever is there might be new to science. So this is very exciting beyond archaeology.
It's incredible. It's such a whimsical thing to think about that things like this, I would think that it's very well established. It's, you know, got a little campsite up here. There's a hermit or two living over here that's like, stay off my rock. It's been very well explored. But you're saying that this is probably one of the first photos of this, color photos for sure.
Yes. And that the photo you have on the left, which is a color photo right there, where you have, that's where the mountain is. That's where that particular mountain is. You nail it. That particular point there is where the mountain is. The southern part of that, or the bottom part of that picture is Brazil. All what you see in rose color is Brazil. This is a radar image getting from the German Aerospace Center. We're working with them since 2009, doing this thing type of research. But we have access now to very, very high resolution radar images that allow us to navigate the landscape, not even without being there. With VR technology, we can actually navigate these images at a very, very high resolution. So even before we go there, we know the area already. And this is an advantage we have right now with the new technologies. The satellites you see on top, those are the TandemX. Those are the ones producing those type of images. And they have been very helpful to us because otherwise, I mean, it would take years and a lot of resources. But with this technology, with this new radar technology, it's amazing what you can do right now. And we're taking advantage of it.
You know what's interesting? I love this, by the way. Do you have a larger image of this that we can see?
Yeah, sure, for sure. I can share it with you.
Okay, if you don't mind, share. We're doing all this real time, guys. So I also just want to ask, because there is sort of an anomaly here. Do you see this little area here? It looks like a lot of hatch structuring in there, and I don't see it anywhere else on any of the other mountaintops.
Yes, that is an anomaly that the image produced because there is not enough data there.
I see.
It's so sharp. The peak is so sharp, as you can see on the right image, that the radar doesn't get it complete, you know. It has this radar has that particular problem where their peaks are very pointed, like the one you see. So they're missing data that that, you know, that the radar image do not show. But this is quite relevant, and with this study we're doing there, this is a very bold, this is middle of nowhere. If you can think of right now one place in the world that haven't been explored, this is it. This is it. I mean, this is one of the most mysterious places you can think of right now in South America. And I visited a couple years ago, and I'm wishing to go back because we found close to this mountain, we found an archaeological place, which we are studying right now.
Oh, so cool. I love this, Jose. We love your work. You just taking us through this. It's like we get to live vicariously through you in this adventurous spirit. And I definitely consider you the Indiana Jones of South America, man. You have, look at this, guys. This is, of course, one of the pieces that we featured on the show, episode 138. It's linked down in the show description. But you just standing here for scale to see the vastness of this and just the work that this took and what it meant and the overlays and just the story that you're able to recover, especially with your D-stretch technology that takes you even deeper into that. But this remote area, and if you don't mind, let's go ahead and move to a map that we had pulled up for this. And if you don't mind, tell us what we're looking at here.
We're looking at the Chimantá Plateau. This is one of the largest plateaus we have here. It's a flat mountains. There's about nearly 2,500. Some of them, they reach the 3,000 meter height. And these particular mountains are so isolated that all the vegetation, all the species, everything that is on top has remained there for the last 100,000 years. So this is what has been raising up the stories about dinosaurs, and it inspired the novel of Arthur Conan Doyle, The Lost World, was inspired in these mountains. And this particular one, probably we only have been exploring no less than 3%. This is huge. This is a very, very huge mountain, as you can see with the scale. And on top of that, we basically are still exploring it. It's so amazing, it's so isolated that, you know, it will take generations to finish the exploration of this particular mountain. There are caves inside these mountains, which are kilometers long, sorts of distinct species and even minerals never seen before have been found on top of these mountains. And these mountains were there before the life started on the planet. This is the reason why you don't find the fossils on them. You know, they're so old. And wow. And close to them, where that particular red dot is the Upuigma Tepuy. This is what we found on the right image. On the right image, right there, on the number one, is where we found one of the archaeological places containing rock art that now it's being shown on National Geographic History and other magazines and portals around the world, because it's a particular new archaeological place. But not only because of that, but because of so far, we're getting to know that we're in presence of a new culture. The all the evidences that we're handling right now is talking about a new culture, and this is very relevant. This is what we want to be talking about in your program.
So cool. Okay, so let me ask you this. Does this number one on the map here correspond to one of the 3D models that you'd sent?
Yeah, that's the first one.
This one here. Okay, yes. This is what I thought, because behind here in the first, we have a huge mountain area behind here, but it's way across that plateau. Just for sight here, guys, this is the large boulder, the monolith that he is talking about here in the 3D model here. Now, he sent me these 3D models, which if it's okay for me to do so, I'll link down in the show description for you guys to check out. But look at this thing. How cool is this? You get to grab and walk around it. So yes. This is out there on the plateau. And is this what you're standing in front of in...
Exactly. Exactly.
This image?
Exactly. That particular image is in front of that particular area. And the good thing about these models is that you can check them with VR lenses. If you use your VR, you can be there. Actually, you're looking at it in real size. We did this image with a drone and with helicopter pictures. And, wow. and it's a very high resolution. This platform Sketchfab doesn't allow you to, you know, to put more than 200 megabytes, but we have 2 gigas of information regarding display. So the details that we can, you know, use in the lab are so fantastic that will be helpful for, you know, for scientists and for other researchers to make, you know, a good a good exploration of it, you know, and make their own results. Because we're just starting. We're just starting with this. It's so fascinating what technology can do.
What's in between here, in between the rocks?
That's a crack. Freezer? If you can see that, that was a boulder, a complete boulder that broke in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, at some point, those two pieces that were connected.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, this just fell off.
Yeah, fell off, and there are pictograms or all over it. So there is not only like panels that you can see, but this whole structure may act as a church for these people. These people, I mean, it's not that they were living there. They probably gathered there for hunting. As you go to your cabin with your friends to hunt, some people went here over times, over thousands of years, and they gathered there. And it was a particular place where we believe they did ritualistic activities in such place.
This is incredible, Jose. Guys, if you've not joined the video version of this yet, check it out down there. Oh, no way. It shows you. Does it show you hollow cavities underneath, or is this just the?
No, negative? No, it's just that's part of the model.
It's like a little James Bond 007 from N64. Remember that game?
If you go to the right side of the image where you have those little arrows, there are some little arrows down in the left bottom. In the bottom left of the image, you press those arrows there. Yeah, go check. There you go.
Whoa.
Then you have the full screen. And if your screen is big, you will have fun.
Whoa. Because you could see right in between here.
Yeah, it's a very, very high resolution. And it's all paints. All images all over the place, and this technology, they're so amazing, you know, that right now I have a clear picture of it. You know, I have in my mind, I can close my eyes and I can navigate through it because I have seen it so many times.
This is so cool.
It's within my brain.
I bet. I mean, you've just memorized every little bit of it.
Yes. And if you check their other image, if you go for escape now, you do the escape button.
See, and that's just one, guys. I could sit there and do that on that all day for one. And then we'll go back.
Go to the second one. That one. That one is a place within that boulder. And this is very interesting. This is a very interesting feature because what we're looking here, those signs that we have here. Our studies, the evidences we have been collecting and we have been checking with other sites across the South America region are telling us that this is so old that they might be some of the oldest rock art manifestations in South America, which are compared to some that have been already dated nearly 8,000 years ago in Patagonia. And it's so fantastic that we are being able to look at this. Because it's new. I mean, nobody ever seen it before. I mean, you're probably one of the first people right now seeing it, and it's a honor for me to share with your audience. We didn't have this before, and if you move the model a bit, you will check that this model is an overhang.
Oh, wow!
It is very, very close to the ground. And you have to sit in order to be there. This is like a small little cave that, you know, that you have that inside, and you can approach, you can zoom in and zoom out and see some of the motifs that they are there, and they're so fascinating because those models they're similar to the ones, motifs. They're similar to the ones we're looking now in northern Brazil, the Guianas, and even southern Colombia. And probably I can tell you for sure that this is one of the first models ever done in archaeology in Venezuela. So we are doing some relevant things here, which, you know, combine technology with art, with rock art, and with exploration. And this is so fantastic because this is telling us about a new culture. And you don't talk about a new culture every day. And this is why... This is why National Geographic is showing it right now. It's showing it as a new, because it's totally new. I mean, this is something we're just starting to explore, to research, and our next like, steps there will be to excavate, because we need to date. We need to go there and try to establish a date for these paints. There are different type of methodology that you can use. But one of the ones that we need to do is to go and excavate. We need to go to the lower layers and try to find a piece of charcoal that, you know, that probably won't connect the paints, but probably will tell us how old or how ancient the first occupations of this place were.
This is just remarkable, man. These look like veins, first of all. And what's fascinating about this image, too, is that you can see, if I can angle it right, you can see the thickness to them.
Yeah, those particular patterns that you're looking at are termites. They're insects.
Really?
Yeah, they're insects building their road. That's how the termites move around. They produce their own tunneling. They construct like tunnels, and they move through, you know. But this is not good because this is ruining the paints.
Yeah, I was about to say that's not good because it looks like it's screwing it up, isn't it?
Yeah, at some point we will need to make a good protection about this place and other places we have been looking at, because it's not only the termites. We have wasp nests, we have fungus, we have vegetation growing on top. And, mm-hmm. and we need to protect. And there is something fascinating about this that you will see on the presentation that I share with you when you move through it, is that behind these paints, there are other ones, but the eye do not see them. You need to apply an algorithm. I will be showing to you. You need an algorithm in order to enhance, because behind those images, they're more, they're much more. So let me see. In the presentation that I shared to you, the Valcamonica presentation.
This one here.
It's in the. Let's see. It's in the minutes. Okay, if you go to the presentation and move around the room, you keep going forward, you will see that there are, that's the Upogma Tepuy that we're talking about. That's in front of it. Keep going.
This is just stunning, man. This is I would just sit there all day and look at it.
This is in front of it. This is fantastic view.
So when you turn around, do you see this behind you?
Yes, exactly. Okay. But if you keep going on, that's the Chimanta. Behind the Zupuyma Tepuy Rock Shelter. And if you can keep going through stop it there. You have the Tepuy on the back. You have the helicopter. That's the only way to go there.
So cool.
If you wanted to walk to this place from the closest place, I mean, it takes you like a month to go back and forward. So definitely you need a helicopter to move around, because this area is all huge. And there is nobody there. I mean, in the whole 30,000 square kilometers, there is only 15 to 20,000 people. That's it. And of course, it's a national park.
Good, good.
But if you
I'd
keep
like
moving, if you keep moving forward the video, I will share with you there. Okay.
Wow.
If you go, put play on the image, go for the play. Play, there you go. Okay. If you keep looking at it, now we apply the algorithms. And when we apply the algorithms, we can see images that are not visible to the eye that are telling us that these images, they have been overlapping with time. You know, people have been there once and again and over. So they're painting on top of it. And there is a particular image that will come on next that can prove this. And I have done a lot of work with this. This has been 15 years of work. We have been extracting every single detail with Photoshop, with the use of the algorithms, try to understand how these people have been using this area for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. And look at the landscape. This is so fantastic. Gorgeous. And of course, we believe this landscape had an impact on the people living there or making their life there. And here's a view of the panel. I show it to you. This is very interesting because now we apply the algorithms. Keep going. Let the video go. And we apply the algorithms and you start to see features that are behind that otherwise is impossible to see. Keep the video going. So this is some reconstruction of this particular yellow panel area. This is from the inside of this panel area. Look at the view.
It's having an impact on us, and we're not even there. It's stunning.
These people, they must have an impression of this, that, you know, they have been impacted by this landscape. They were probably so connected to the landscape at some point that they probably had an impact on them. And this is totally new. This is the one I wanted to show you. This is the one that I wanted to show you, okay, where you can see. There you go. That's the original image. And now we apply the algorithm. Wow. And look at how some other signs show up that the eye do not see. You know, it's so amazing. It is so amazing. And this talks about the occupation of this place over time. And this is the only way we can see it. We need technology to advance. I mean, all these places and the ones already known by science that have been studied, when you apply technology, they become new. They become totally new. So this is the relevance of technology right now. And if you consider artificial intelligence to be processed with this, I mean, we're just starting. It's so exciting because we're starting a new era of research on rock art.
It's incredible. I want to back up to an image that I saw because this just stood out to me. Let's do right here first. Okay. These are so cool, by the way. You did an amazing job on this. What a presentation. Okay. So do you see this cube right here or this looking figure? Doesn't this look like a cube to you? Or do you think that it's just more double stacking or line and this is meant to be more of a perceived as a rectangle? I have two questions in this photo.
This is very interesting. This is very interesting because we're seeing here what is called in rock art is geometric patterns. These geometric patterns, they have been found all across Europe. Some of them, they're back 40,000, 60,000 years old. And the first ones, they're recording right now that they have been performed by Neanderthals. Neanderthals probably were the first species to do rock art. And this is something now is new and is being studied. But the same signs you're looking here are exactly the same ones you see in Europe. And what does this tell us? It tells us at something related to our brains, to developing of the brain, how the brain process is trying to interpret the reality that those people had in front of them and how this pattern have been evolving through time to the moment that they became figurative. Figurative means that you have signs in the form of, let's say, a fish or a snake or a person or a buffalo or any other animal. We don't see any single figurative motif in the ones we're looking at right now. It's all geometric. And this is compared when you give a kid a piece of paper and some pencils. What do the kid do? You know, all what the kid do is same type of forms. They start to make dots. They start to make lines. They start to make the connections between them. And they start to make patterns, and this is exactly what we're looking at. We're looking at very primitive form of communication and an expression that is talking about the development stages of the brain at some point, you know, thousands of years ago. And this is very fascinating. This is very, very interesting.
It is. And this is another one I wanted to point out to you. When you mention lack of structured figures, this kind of to me looks like they're drawing humans. You know, the two arms, the head, the torso, and the legs. It's almost like their earliest attempt to draw figures in a sense. Do you see that at all?
Yes. Keep going with the image so we can see it better.
Yeah.
Keep going a bit so we can see it much better. And I will tell you something about it.
This is incredible. Just absolutely incredible. I think you jumped to that one next.
Let's go back so we can see it much better. Okay, let's see. I don't think.
There
you go.
Okay.
There you go. Okay. Well, what do we have here? I mean, we as an archaeologist, we do not interpret this type of thing. It's very difficult to enter the mind of people that lived 4,000, 10,000 years ago. This is impossible. It's impossible to say what is here. So this is the first thing. But it's, you know, it's open to people to try to interpret whatever they're seeing there, because it's between the possibilities. I mean, we do not know what really these people meant with this, but it's within the possibilities. That particular sign that has like that is like a ladder. That particular sign that is called a scaliform sign. Some people say that could be a ladder. Some people they think that this could be a palisade where you bring animals in order to close them so they don't move forward and you can hunt them. And if you look at the figures you saw before, that you consider that they could be humans. Of course, they could be humans. And those little dots that you can see there, they could represent herds. Represent herds of animals being directed to this palisade where they won't go away and they will be easier to hunt. And this is just an interpretation. I don't write about this. And the other figures that you see that they're like boomerangs and on top that you see that they're right, that one and the other one, they could be actually some sort of instrument in order to, you know, to throw to the animals so they move forward and, you know, you keep pushing them in order to go to this particular area where you will be easier to hunt them. But this is an interpretation and we do not... As an archaeologist, we do not write about interpretation. This is something, you know, it's just an idea. But it's fascinating to think about. I mean, it's fascinating to think about a group of people directing animals to a place where it's going to be easier for them to hunt them. But that's one interpretation of the many possibilities, you know. And it's just open to your brain, to your way of thinking, you know, what you can see.
Seeing even more of that, because if you look at it here, these three figures, one that's associated with the upper boomerang or a kite type of an instrument, this one as well. So you have these two flanking on either side, arms up. And what do we do when we're driving things and moving? What do cowboys do? Ha, ha, right? They're flailing arms. They're acting like a predator to drive. And if you look at this one here, it is also flailing arms, but in an orientation directing the splitaway herd off. I love your interpretation, because you've got three figures here active in moving this direction. You've got one active, it looks like, because this is showing, in my mind, action. And he's driving the rest of the herd this way.
Exactly.
Separating it out in some way.
Exactly. Remember that animals such as the deer, for instance, they move in herds. I mean,
they do move in herds. Sometimes,
especially in the mating season. In the mating season is where, you know, where they move around and they're more closely to each other. So probably the mating season was the hunting season, of course, for these people. And probably they gathered to this particular place because it was a good hunting place. You could see the land from top of the boulder, and you could, you know, check on the herds from the distance in order to approach them and make an easier hunting. That's a particular interpretation, but I'm not, as an archaeologist, I don't write about that. You know,
I like your interpretation.
I share this with you, but there could be many things. It could be many interpretations to this. We need to remain objective all the times.
Totally. Something else I'm just curious about here is I'm curious about number in these types of things, because I know that spirals, the arms when you count those, different things like this in various petroglyphs from other cultures. Do you find a consist or a pattern at all in the count that's associated with any of these, what we look like to be just kind of isolated?
It is very difficult to say. I have another interpretation for that scalariform sign that I would be talking to you because there are many. I have seen in many other places, I have seen this particular pattern, and we will see it through the presentation, that the same pattern repeats in other shelters, no matter where they're 200 kilometers away or 300 or 700 kilometers away. The same pattern repeats, and that's that pattern of the dots also repeats, and that particular pattern might have a distinct meaning. And I have done some anthropological research, and it is connected to some other ideas that actually the actual Indians living in the area still have that particular idea of what probably this mean and or meant in that at so many thousand years ago. So as we move through this presentation, I can talk to you about it, because there are many interpretations, but yes, it can be anything. I mean, for some people, that representation of the dots could be also stars. Could be a way of seeing the stars as you can see in some other places.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I was thinking here, this would be an interesting calendar as well, because if you've got what I count here is 11 bars across, and if you think of them as tracking moons here, then they would put the 11, and then if they were on a 13-month calendar, they may heads and tails it to give you the total number. So they're telling you out of 13 months total, 13 moons, this occurred on the 11th one. Something like that, you know?
Yeah,
and that's why I was curious if there was a consistency in number and things like that, because it could be more like a calendar, right? Because so they could just be tracking moons.
Interesting. It could be anything.
So really interesting. I just love it. I could just sit here and stare. I can't wait to go do this with you. We're totally going to come out here on this plateau, because I've just got to see the area. It's gorgeous, man.
That's another particular interesting area. You go back a bit back. This is a different, right there. This is a distinct place. You can see it's in a different position. This is
called we were down here in the other one, guys.
This is not far. This is about the distance from one place to the other. It's about 160 kilometers away. But this place, when we got to this place, because we had some information from an elder man that told us that close to this particular tepuy, which is called the Kusari. If you move forward the presentation, you let it go for a bit. I can talk to it. That's the tepuy. The only way we were able to get here, of course, was with a helicopter again. But this particular tepuy, we heard that this was there was a place with paints there. So we did our research with satellite images, and we found a boulder that you can see right now from the air.
Cool.
It's completely covered with vegetation. So we took the helicopter as close as we could, and we went there. We managed to go through the bush. It was a virgin bush. I had no roads. I had no nothing. And finally, when we got to this particular place, there were the same type of images. Stop it there. Stop a bit there. Bit there so we can see that. Yeah. Bit there. Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah, we had it. Okay. I can back it up to.
So when we got there, stop it there. You can stop it. Right. When you see there, you can see same type of patterns that you saw in the in the Upomigmatepui. You can see the scalary forms again. You can see the dots. You can see all kind of things. But what called the attention from the other place related to this one is that the paints in this particular area are more crude performed. It's more rough. It's more primitive. And this was fascinating because this is not so elaborate. So what it means to us is that this could be older than the ones we already saw because it's not elaborated. When you see places like in Colombia or in Brazil and so many other places, you see the figures already elaborated. You see birds, you see snakes, you see fish. But here you see something very, very crude, something very, very ancient, something very, very old. And right at the bottom, where that scale is, that's a half a meter scale. That is the place where we want to excavate. And we're looking forward to it. We already introduced the permit, the request for the permits to excavate there. Because when these people make these paints, they probably left traces of ochre or charcoal or some other tools or even food in the form of spores or, you know, microorganisms that you can, you know, check in your lab that these people were eating or collecting or whatever. And those will be helpful to date. To date, not necessarily the paints, but the occupation. I mean, when these people arrive here for the first time, and this is a clue we have right now, this is our major clue, and this is where we're moving towards it. But the type of figures that we're looking here, they're, to my consideration, they're much older than the ones we already saw on the Upuigma. And this is fascinating. If you keep running it, keep the video running it. This is a video then you can show with your audience.
We're going to put it in the show description, guys. I'm going to link the whole thing. I'll link his YouTube channel, but this video in particular.
Yes, because I'm speaking in English there. This was in Valcamonica, June last year. I was invited to this international rock art presentation. And the people there were stunning to see this because it's new. You're the first people looking at it right now. I mean, this is not even published. We're in the publication process, of course. We have some papers in peer review right now, and they might be coming out by the end of the year. But you're looking here is totally new. Here is another panel at the same rock shelter, and you will enjoy this because this panel is people have been using their hands in order to cover the wall with red ochre. And this might be part of ritualistic procedures that these people they were using. For us, it's so connected to rituals. People were perhaps performing rituals for good hunting, for curing disease, for going into some magical procedures, some connections with the nature, with their ancients. I mean, and this is fascinating. We can say what those signs mean, but we for sure know that these people had a connection with the supernatural world through these rock art manifestations. And this is so fascinating because, I mean, look at this, man. This is the upper part of the panel, and it is so incredible. It's so incredible, so exciting. To see these once and again and again and again, because we will never know what it means, but of course it had a meaning. It had a meaning, and who knows, man? In the future, with artificial intelligence, we will probably be approaching, but it will be very interesting to find out what it meant, no? But at the moment, we can say that this ritualistic for them, these places in the bush and in the savannas, they were like churches for us. You know, these people approach these places in order to, you know, connect to their ancestors, to their identities, to their relatives, and perhaps to perform ritualistic process in order to teach the younger of the groups, you know, about some things necessary for their survival, for their moving on.
This is just incredible. 5, 5, none over 13. This one's 10 as well. Or this one's 10, not 11.
You're looking for patterns, huh?
I am, yeah. I'm a human. Yeah, pattern-seeking mammal,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
It's not broached either, because if you look here, this just has a top part and not, and this could delineate first half of the year, second half of the year, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. Something very interesting that struck out to me is this area right here. Do you see, or maybe this is pareidolia, but I see two little shadow figures here, but they're very, yes, very tall. But then also I see, yes, an orb here that's got some rays, yes, coming down from it.
Yes, and I mean, you check that orb there. They were using the same feature that the rock had. So it meant that before they produced the circle, they already saw it. They already saw it in the rock. You can check, they just completed what the rock was,
and you can
telling
see
them.
Yeah, you can see, yes, other formations that would have offered to that sort of shape here as well that they just didn't want to utilize or didn't seem to,
exactly,
take advantage of.
Exactly. And this is the same thing you see in Altamira Cave in Spain. The Altamira Cave in Spain, where they have been producing the bisons, they're using features from the ceiling of the cave in order to place the bison, because they saw the bison there before they painted. And this is so fascinating, because it's talk about the development of the mind, how the mind evolved. And we're looking at at how we became speaking people. You know, this is the first form of language that took us to the, you know, spoken word. And this is so fascinating, because at the end of the day, this is us. This is us thousands of years ago, you know, trying to communicate with us and with the supernatural world, perhaps, you know.
Yep. Here's another DNA type structure. And this one here with the line running down the middle, as it did in this past one, it almost serpent-like right here. You had it beautifully, yes, illustrated. And it looks like this line running down the center, but also it squiggles out almost like either a tuft of smoke coming up or... more obviously, I would think like a snake's tongue, and that may be just the way that they were able,
yes,
to depict
there
it.
Yeah, it could be many interpretations,
many
there,
things,
but
man,
the same phenomenon you see here, you see in the northern part of Brazil, you see in the Guianas, and you see it in Colombia. And I'm going to talk to you about this in a while as we go through a presentation, because for us, Canaima area was the zero point or the zona zero, you know, of the evolving of this particular culture. We believe these people got here and they established themselves there and they evolved here. And from here, they spread across the region. And we can see them through the rock art manifestation, how the stylistics are similar to the ones we've been looking at some other places around the continent. Then you see the patterns again.
Yes, it's interesting. They're in sets of threes and fours. Have you noticed that as well, the dots? They're in,
yes,
three across or four across.
Yeah, this particular sign, I had to use a drone in order to see it because it's very high up. It's about some 12 meters on top of the roof. I mean, you have to place your head up in order to see it, and it had a meaning. Here is something very interesting. Keep the video running, because that crack on the left, that particular crack, when I entered there and I explored, I saw this inside.
Whoa.
And this is fascinating, because this sign, again, is talking about this particular net pattern that it must have a meaning. But this is a complete darkness. The people doing this pattern, they had to light the fire in order to produce it. And this is very interesting to us, because we're expecting to find charcoal in order to date this charcoal in this area. So we probably can approach the moment when this sign was produced. And this is one of our expectations with this particular place. This, again, some patterns as chains, very interesting. They're being ruined now by fungus, by vegetation, but clearly you can see them. And they're similar to the ones that we're looking at some other places in Brazil and so on and some other places.
Can I ask you, I'm going to ask you a question. Did you make that ladder while you guys were out,
yes,
there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's incredible. You were just like, yes, well, we need a ladder.
Yes,
we can fit in the helicopter.
Funny. That this is very funny because there is a picture I found in some it's a picture I found in some book from Sir what's this guy, David Attenborough.
Oh, okay.
David Attenborough went to Guyana at some point, and he made a ladder himself in order to see it the same way I did it. We are in the same position. It's very funny. It was 50 years ago, Sir Attenborough, who has, you know, it's a very well famous author from.
Oh yeah.
From you know, wildlife and so on. From
yeah,
from
the British guy. He talks over
British
the
guy. Yes, and he made the same ladder, and he has an image. I will share it with you afterwards. But it was very funny. But
it's
the only way I had to check on some signs, because it means that these people, they had to use ladders as well,
right,
in order to go so high up in the walls. So probably they had ladders. They have other structures, but it meant something. It had a meaning. I mean, why to place the paints so high up in the panel? And this is something very, very interesting to find out, you know, because it's a pattern that you see all across the region. I don't know why they had to go so much high up in order to place these signs, and it must have a meaning.
And I was going to ask her, do you think the landscape was just so dramatically different that was on the ground then, you know, that it was much lower, or that there was something next to it, a tree or something that it grew there they could stand on easily? But
this is
you see this in the cliff dwelling of the South American Southwest as well, as these real steep, dramatic entrances and exits that they needed to hewn these really elaborate ladders out of.
Yes, I found images all over the place. This is very interesting because we cannot connect the idea of the images with anything else. But there is a particular sign here that I am able to speculate that probably represented this particular mountain. And as you see, you will see it. There you go. There you
Whoa.
Go.
This, yes, this. With the obvious stripe down it.
Yeah,
you would have
exactly,
noted that in
exactly.
Our...
This is something fascinating. I'm not writing about it, you know. I'm not writing about it, but it's evident. It's evident that these people probably they were trying, you know, to connect this mountain to this particular sign. And this is very interesting because this is a way to look at the signs as well. Signs could meant places, could meant, you know, like this thing's place. This is another place that I discovered myself. Nobody told me about this place. I had an intuition about this place. Why? Because every time I landed on a plane, I saw these cliffs at some distance. And at some point that I was into this place, I decided to go to the cliffs because I had this feeling inside. I had this feeling inside these cliffs. And, you know, if you tell me where you would like to do some paints, I would choose those cliffs to do the paints. So I went to the cliffs, and what I found is stunned me out. You know, it really amazed me. And this is where the cliffs are. And that's the Canaima area. That's the most famous area for tourists in Venezuela. But these are the cliffs. That particular arrow there on top is the last area we saw before. So
where
these places
are not
really far away from each other. But when I got to the cliffs, man, I had to climb up to where these cliffs were. And when I got there, you know, what I found, it was so excited. Because nobody told me about this. And again, boom, there you go. Again, more paints, more particular signs that if you let it go a bit, that scale is 1 meter. But if you let the video go a bit and we apply the algorithms again, we will see much more of what is evident to the eye. And this is fascinating because, you know, we're using technology in order to interpret those motifs, the position they have on the cliff, what does they meant, and what we're looking at is so incredible that definitely we are talking about a new culture which has spread across a large area in northern South America, which connects this area in Venezuela with Brazil, with Colombia, with the Guianas. And perhaps even with Patagonia, because we're looking at the same signs that they have been found in Patagonia. And this is telling us about culture, a hunter artist culture that stay at some moment in this area, probably some 10,000 years ago, between 10,000, 7,000, 5,000 years ago. And this is something we're trying to find out right now. But what we're looking at is fascinating. It's so fascinating because it's not only new, but it's a cultural heritage for humanity right now. And this is something I'll be going to talk to you at the end of the of our talk, because this is where we're moving forward, because we need to preserve this rock art. We need to do a preservation of it. We need to study it, and we need to transmit to the next generations. Otherwise, our work will have any meaning at all. You know, this is something, this is a legacy that some people is giving to us, and we need to continue giving to other generations that come afterwards.
Your reverence for this is just beautiful. I know that you keep saying that you're not writing about it, but I hope that the people that do have enough common sense and good judgment and wisdom to come talk to you as they're writing about it, because you've got the insights from boots on the ground. Okay, couple of things in this. Obviously, we're a little, there's some very interesting, these loops with the staff running through. You've got a few more. One of the most prominent things here is the thing that you had the icon on. Now, if you look at this, it's 7 across by 4 down. That's 28. So if you're thinking moon cycles, the moon cycles every 28 days, right? It's pretty interesting. Could be calendar type. You've got 12 by 8 here as well, but I think that there's a 12th here. So that'd be 12 by 12, 144, which would be an interesting counting method as well. But you also have these tree type structures that seem to have different grow heights, which also lend for new needles on them. And then again, you have these understaffs, void overs. And I think there's one that goes to 13, 1, 2, 3. I know that this one goes back to, this is our 11, 2 standard here. So 11 across, 2 top, so that's 13 total. It's just fascinating, man, when I'm looking at this.
It's fascinating. And I have my theories about this that I will be sharing with you, because I did a research on locals, the Pemons, which are living there. The Pemons, that's a very interesting and very, very fascinating indigenous group that inhabit the region, but they're new. They only have 500 years there. I mean, when the conquerors arrived to the continent, to this particular area, the Pemons, they were there already, but it's known that they only been there for 500 years. And 500 years in, you know, terms of indigenous studies, basically nothing, because
just babies, they're the new kids
compared,
on the block.
Compared what we're looking at, something that probably the lowest dating that we have here probably is 4,000 years old. So compare 4,000 with 500, I mean, it means nothing. But the Pemons, they have a particular mythology that talks about the net that the spirit of the dead have to go across when they move through their journey after their dying. And perhaps we're not far away to interpret that some of these patterns that we're looking at as a netting pattern is connected to a death process. I mean, what we're looking here in this world, probably, this is my own interpretation. I don't write about this. I'm telling you because, you know, I also like to get into some of these, you know, with a friend like you that, you know, have the intelligence to understand this. But perhaps every sign is related to a death of somebody. Perhaps every time that somebody died, somebody came here to place the net of this knowledge that probably they inherit. And this net, as I tell you, is connected to some traditions of the actual Indians. Where go to the next image, so we have a close up of the net, of the netting pattern, because I think the next image goes to the it's a closer view of the center of this panel. So this netting pattern, it's an idea that the spirit, when the spirit dies, it has to go across a place in order to continue, you know, the journey. I mean, it's not that you die and that's it. No, you die, but afterwards you die, you have to go across this there you go. You can stop it right there. And if you can see this square symbol, that you, before you number it, with, you know, that particular one, And we will be looking to another particular symbol that I found when I went to Tubal Camonica area. Let me see if I can have it here. But not to get the idea lost, these signs perhaps are related to funeral processes. Perhaps they mean something when the people die. When the people die, probably some people came to these places in order to pay respect and to assure that the spirit of the disease, you know, had a good, you know, going through these portals of whatever, you know, and go across them and continue their lives into the stars. And this is represented at some point where these signs are represented with dots in between. There is one in the Upuigma that you saw, that there is like the net and that had the little dots within it. So these little dots might represent the stars. And of course, when you stand in these places, they're so fantastic that you, in one night, you can see your shadow just because of the light of the stars. It's so extraordinary, the light that comes to you at this point, that these people at some point, they had to look up and see the stars and think of the traveling of the spirit to the stars. I mean, they have probably this idea that, you know, you don't go to the earth or go below, but you go up. I mean, your spirit goes through this pattern into the stars. And this is, I'm not saying this. This is a Pemon indigenous interpretation of this pattern they call the net. And who knows, you know, it's very difficult to say, but this is a possibility we have right now to interpret that most of the signs represented in these panels across the region, they're probably related to funeral process, which I wouldn't be surprised.
I've got something to say about this in the afterthought. Something interesting to say about this. So definitely check the afterthought link, guys. Great way to support your favorite show. Definitely some connections to make there. And the hint is DMT. But we're going to move on with the presentation here. What do you make of... So some letters are turned sideways, some are up and down. Do you see that distinction as well? Do you think that has any delineation? Probably once we figure out what they're for, the orientation may make more sense, right?
Well, it's very difficult to say, man. It's really, really difficult to say, you know. Anthropologists are more into this because they study the actual indigenous groups and they can connect, let's say, what they paint now, as they paint their bodies, or they, you know, they made their basketry with signs and particular things. So they can make connections. But for me, it is very, very difficult to connect any of these ideas with what we're looking at. You know, we as archaeologists, we're more objective. You know, we present what we have. These are evidences. And if somebody, you know, wants to make their own opinions, you know, they can go ahead and look for it. I wanted to call your attention right now. If you can write down in your browser, if you put Valcamonica rock art, as it stay on the video, Valcamonica name. If you put Valcamonica, there you go. Look at the image. First one.
Yes, yes.
That's Italy. That's the Alps in Italy. Look at that.
I've definitely seen these before.
That's what I mean. You know, the human brain had a particular development at some particular time, and these patterns, they're represented all over the world. They're represented all over the place. And probably they're similar, but probably they had different meanings. So it is very difficult because the conditions in Valcamonica, if you check them with the conditions in the Canaima particular area, they're so different. But who knows? You know, probably it meant the same. Probably this pattern had the same meaning, but who knows? I mean, it's very, very difficult to say. But if you look at it, it's exactly what we're looking at. It's exactly what we look at Upuigma. It's exactly what we look at Kusari Tepui. And it's exactly what we're looking at now at the Cuyarimpa cliff. Go back to the very beginning where we saw the other image, the first image at the Puigma. Go to the beginning, back. Keep going back. Keep going. There. Go a little bit forward. Yeah, there. You see the same pattern.
Yeah.
Now keep going back. Keep going. There. No, back. Keep going back. There. Be forward. There. See? We're looking at the same pattern, the same net pattern. It's a square divide, you know, and this, the fact that we don't know see the same representation, it doesn't mean anything, but the idea was there, you know. It's a square type of thing, divide, and, you know, sometimes I have dots, sometimes it do not, but in every single place that we saw, actually the beginning of every chapter on this presentation, I place the sign. You already saw it. And this is because I want to transmit that there is some connection between the styles that we're looking at. And this is very important in archaeology, that we, you know, we study the styles. And the fact that they're not exactly the same, it means nothing, because they were performed by distinct artists. But perhaps the main idea was there. They wanted to mean something with it. And for me right now, is that these particular signs are connected to death, to the process of death, which is one of the most fascinating ideas that man has been having. And most of the extraordinary mysteries we're handling right now is what is after death. You know, what comes on next? I mean, do we really die? Do we really go to another place? I mean, nobody knows. But and these people, 10,000 years ago, perhaps they had the same idea. They couldn't interpret, they couldn't say, they couldn't know, but, you know, who knows, they paid respect to their deceased people, and they connected to them. Every time they went back to this place, they probably remember their dead, you know? And this is why this is spiritual. This has a transcendence that gets to us right now, because, you know, every time we think of our deceased people, you know, we pay respect, you know, we connect, we get inside ourselves, in order to, you know, to realize that we're going to die at some point too. You know, this is so fascinating. We're looking at us thousands of years ago, and we're no different from these people, my friend. This is what I try to transmit. You know, we have technology right now. We have all kinds of good things that civilization is giving us, but at the end of the day, we're going to face
same priorities, same questions. Where do we come from? What's important to me, my family, you know, real natural, real things.
Exactly. So if you ask me what those signs mean, I am pretty sure, you know, that they had a ritualistic meaning, and they were really rooted inside their people hearts and minds, and that was a way to connect them with their people, that they were not there at that moment, and to the supernatural world, as well as to the environment. I mean, it was all connected. I believe there were no difference between the sacred and the profane in those times, you know, as we do have right now. Everything for them was perhaps very clear, you know.
Yeah, I doubt a lot of your tribal members... community members were trying to talk you out of prophetic experiences you had, because they were experiencing them too.
Yes.
So it was appreciated, very, very, not shunned and gaslit.
Yes. So if you keep going forward in the presentation, so we can advance to other places, go back. Okay. Go back. Okay. Here, these petroglyphs are different from the paints, because, you know, the petroglyphs are carved into the the rock, and they are newer. We now know this, petroglyphs, they were produced at some point where these people, they're probably doing agriculture. It was a different period time. I mean, I don't think these people were painting at the same time they were producing the petroglyphs. There might be a connection, but there is a big difference in timing. And these petroglyphs that you're looking right now, I found them close in the, within the same area. This is called the Aribe Meru. It's in a rapid area. Again, you see these radar images. This is a Caroni River. This is a fascinating river that belongs to the Orinoco Basin. It's an extraordinary river. It's virgin area. It's within the park. It's fascinating. I hope you sometime can come here and I will show you around.
We will say it to the This is a bucket list.
Through the Caroni and you know, meet those beautiful places with that pristine, you know. These places are so pristine, they're so old that you can basically stay there as these people were, you know, thousands of years ago. You will be looking at the same landscapes. And this is fascinating because it remained the same. So here in this particular area, I found the petroglyph. It was a long time ago. Here's the model that you also can share with your audience afterwards.
Yeah.
But this particular model is fascinating because it connects the style with other styles in the Andean regions. If you look at this, stop it right there for instance. If you look at this, this is an anthropomorphic figure. Anthropomorphic means it's connected to main type of you know, form. And if you look at this on the sides, they're like big ears. It has like big ears. And he have like big like something on the nose, which might be an adorn. And also he has like a crown type of you know, crown on top. This is telling me that probably is connected to the groups of people in the Andean region, such as the Incas or the Chibchas, that you know they had. A big earrings that, you know, they hang it from the ears, and they were very, very funny. That probably this is what they're trying to interpret, you know, the big ears, which was a sign of status. These people with a nose adornments and the ears and the crown type of symbols, they were high status people. They were the elite, and this particular sign, when we saw it, it calls our attention because there is nothing we have seen similar in the whole Venezuela area related to this. Actually, this is not in the Venezuelan records. The first publication of this, which I think I shared with you, the publication we have in the Rock Art Research magazine. This particular petroglyphs is new. It's new to the area. It's new to the world. It's new to Venezuela. And it's in a very particular area where the river at some points might cover it because of the flooding. So perhaps the up and down of the river regarding to the petroglyph, because it's eroded, and we believe it's perhaps eroded with the water, it perhaps is a marking. It's a marking of the season. So when the water was a particular place, you know, the people probably knew that there was something happening, you know, in terms of hunting or fishing or doing whatever other thing, because it's seasonal, you know. So some of the petroglyphs that we see might be a forms of checking time, you know. So they knew when the petroglyph was covered with the water, something happening, and it repeated year after year, year after year. And I was a sort of, you know, of marking time. And this is one of the interpretation for petroglyphs, that you see them on top of the water and then you see them completely covered by the water. So if you keep going on, I will show you more.
I just want to point out the negative relief here and how advanced this technique of carving is, because they showed this on Göbekli Tepe. And this is just a very challenging thing to do.
Yes, but this particular rock, if you look at this, at the next one, the next image that is going to be showing, this is very interesting because this is a light reflecting transformation. This is a technique we use in order to check on the depth of the carving. And the images that you were showing before, you can see that there are some others across the petroglyph. The petroglyph, go back to the image. And make it stop there. Yeah, there. Okay, stop. Okay. If you look at, there's some other, this is called couples. Couples are like rounded things carved into the stone.
Yeah.
And these couples are considered perhaps the oldest petroglyphs manifestations that you have. So perhaps before having this whole petroglyph, which you can see, you know, it's connected to the bottom part of the image. I mean, it's larger. The petroglyph is larger than we looked before. And this we didn't know before until we produced this image. But you see these rounded couples, as they're called, cupulas in Spanish, but couples, there's a lot of articles about these, are perhaps the oldest form of petroglyphs. You know, before men did, you know, anything carved, they did carve these particular rounded things. And the eyes of the figure are done in this particular technique. And this is very interesting because, you know, it talks to us that perhaps before the petroglyph, there were already markings into this area. It does not mean that these people did the petroglyph all at once. These people came to this place year after year, perhaps, or, you know, every once in a while. And every time they were there, they remark and they carve again the petroglyph and they carve it. It's not that they did the petroglyph, you know, at once. They say, oh, let's do this. These people, they weren't doing this because of art. They weren't trying either to produce something beautiful or something. No, it had a meaning beyond that. Also with the paints, they were not meant to be artistic or beautiful or nothing like that. They had a meaning, which we do not know what they meant. But every time they went there, they remarked it. So we found in the petroglyphs as well as in the paints that there's some of them they are remarked. So when people were there, they remarked, you know, they went once and again and they marked it over and they marked it over and they marked it over. And this is the same case here. And that had a meaning. These people, when they stop at this petroglyph, because probably was a stopping point in their journey. It was a point where they decide to stop, to make a camp there for fish, you know, to relax before they continue. So this is what those petroglyphs, it's one of the interpretations of what those petroglyphs meant into the land, as you have there in where you are in Texas or in Arizona or other place in the U.S., Every petroglyph you see, it probably is a stopping point. It's a point that marks a particular area where these people gather, where these people did some ritualistic activities, whatever. But it had a meaning. And the meaning was not because it's beautiful. and this is very, very interesting, you know? This is very interesting to check out.
Or it may have been both. It may have been functional and they just knew how to do it to where it was pleasing to the eye as well, because there's a lot to that, you know, aesthetic functionality.
Yes, and some people have been doing studies on the depth of the carvings relating to particular regional stylistic compared to others. This rock is sandstone, so it's easier to mark that rather than granite, and this is why perhaps you can see that the depth of the carvings is deeper than other ones. But again, remarking the petroglyph was probably ritualistic. I mean, they didn't mark it because, oh, I'm going, you know, to come here and, you know, so it doesn't get lost, so I'm going to make it deeper. No. Every time they remark it, probably they were praying. Probably they were doing some sort of, you know.
Yeah, it's like a mandala.
Inner thinking of, you know, they were remembering their ancestors because they were not the ones that did it. Probably this was performed, you know, 100 years before them, and they came back and they remark it, and this is the way they pay respect or they transmit to the younger their knowledge about the land, about the hunting or about the fishing or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a mandala or something, you know, the rosary beads or something, how people count the rosary beads or saying their prayers. Or the monks do the sand mandalas, you know, they put sand in tiny little and they make this beautiful thing, but it's a very meditative process. So I dig your interpretation on that. Maybe by doing that, you invoked whatever this was for your hunt or for your day or a rite of passage or something, as you said.
Yes, it could have been a deity, you know, for them, of course, something that, you know, they pay respect, a spirit connected to the land, connected to their ancestor, who knows. But the fact is that all these places produces something very, very important into all these groups, which still we do that the same thing, and that's identity. When we look at the flag of our country, when we look at some structures that are in our country, let's say the capitals or churches or whatever you have close to your city, what it produces within you is identity. And this is very important because identity is the foundation of our society. You know, a society that has no identity is not a society. You know, it's just a group of, you know, who knows, but identity is one of the most important and relevant things we have in our culture. And this is the way to preserve our borders, our thoughts, our feelings, our you know, everything that is connected to us has a foundation on identity. And this is all over the world. And this is one of the, you know, basic things that all designs and manifestations that I have been showing to you have. They're there in order to create some identity of the group. The group reflected themselves, no matter whether young or they were dead or whatever, they reflected themselves into those particular motives, and that created identity. And identity with time created a nation, you know? A whole society, a whole country is created on identity. This is very important to have in mind when we look at art or religion or whatever other thing. The basic foundation is always identity.
Wow.
This is a way we connect each other. The problem is that we as human beings haven't connected the whole identity of the world. You know, we're still placing borders around. You know, around the countries, around the
imaginary
places.
Lines. Yeah.
We still do not understand that we're a whole humankind, you know.
And that's part of being human, is realizing that we're so ignorant to our connection, right?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Makes you wonder, makes you think, you know.
Yeah, definitely. It gives you perspective because, like you said, man, I mean, these are, you know, you picture taking your son out hunting or something like this. Well, this is, you know, what these people were doing. It's just, instead of going to Cabela's first to load up on whatever, they stopped by the rock carving and made sure that he etched it because that was part of the process. It's just interesting. The connection is what it was all about, though, like you said. But it's also connecting to the ancestors, the gods, your fellow man, because we were all involved in these rituals as well, or they were. And then it's connecting you to everything. You think this is a volcano?
Yeah, I look at volcano. I say the same thing. It's very interesting that you saw the same particular thing. It looks like a volcano. Well, it could be anything. I have seen other patterns similar, but when I saw it the first time, I had the same words that you said. Yeah. And this is very interesting. This is very interesting because it makes a connection between our brains, between our thoughts. You know, it could mean anything, but I had the same feeling. So look at here. Stop this image here. This is very interesting here because the letter A image, again, you see the scalariform sign, as you've been seeing before. And this is fascinating because this is the first time we can connect the petroglyphs with the paints, with the rock art paints. And this is something I never saw before. You know, I never saw connections between petroglyphs and the signs painted because they're, in terms of time, they're separate so much that it's very difficult. But when you saw, well, when I saw this particular scalariform sign again, being represented as a petroglyph, it told me about the continuity. And continuity is important because somehow knowledge, information is transmitted from one generation to another. And where you had before on the paints on the wall, now you have it in the petroglyphs. And since the petroglyphs are younger than the paints in terms of dating, we can consider that there was a continuity in the evolution of these groups, these human groups that started to produce the rock art. Then they evolved into producing the petroglyphs. And within it, in that particular period of time, they evolved from being hunter-gatherers into more agriculturalist group of people. Why? Because it was a natural process. I mean, first you have, and this is a worldwide phenomenon. First you had the hunters, hunter-gatherers, and then these hunters, when they realized that it was better, you know, to domesticate plants and animals, they stopped hunting. Hunting was not necessary anymore. Why to hunt if I can have the cattle, you know, sitting down whenever I need it? Same with plants. Why do I have to go walk 10,000 thousands of meters or kilometers away from home in order to get a plant? If I can, you know, place the seed on the ground. And this is very important, because this is telling us that when these people arrive there, they arrive in a very ancient period. And we know this because we have been looking at the lithics. There are lithics associated to this rock art manifestation. Some of the places, when I got into them, like the Kusari Tepui, when I look at the ground, it was covered with lithics, like they left it there the day before. I mean, these people, they were chucking rocks in order to produce arrow points, in order to build microblades or blades or whatever other burings or artifacts they needed in order, you know, to cut a piece of wood or to produce a basketry or to produce any other thing they needed. So it was sitting there like they left it yesterday. And this is so fascinating because it doesn't occur commonly on archaeology. And what this is telling us is that these people, they were hunter-gatherers at some point. But what happened? That in some other places, we found lithic tools which are associated to agriculturalist processes. These lithic tools are more associated to chopping wood, like cutting down a tree, or to open the ground so you can, you know, place a seed or get something out of the ground, like a root or something, you know. So these lithic tools, we are studying them right now. They're in the same place and they are overlapped. I mean, we have the lithic tools very, very related to the hunters, but on top of that, we have lithic tools related to agriculturalist people. So it means that it was a continuity. It was an evolution. These people got to this place. They liked the place. They did hunting at some point, but with time, they evolved it, and they become agriculturalists. And more fascinating, on top of that, we have ceramics. We found ceramics. So these people evolved from being an agriculturalist process or group of people to produce ceramics. And this is the same process we see in Europe and all over the world. When we look at the process of civilization, you know, they go from the lower levels to the high levels. And when we start to look at ceramics, we're in a very, very top process of these people, because it meant that they were established. They were starting to establish themselves. When you see ceramic, you don't take ceramics from one place to the other and move 100 kilometers with ceramic piece, because it's going to get break. You know, it's going to break. So when you see ceramics at some point, it means that these people, they were there. They were living there. They were established. And this is fascinating, because we can see the whole process of these human beings coming from 10,000 years old, probably 10,000 years ago, and we can see their evolution through archaeology to the phase of producing ceramics. And this is something we never saw before in Venezuela. In Venezuela, there is no one single place where now you can connect these stages of human development and in one area, in one particular area. And this, my friend, is why we talk about the new culture. We are looking at the new culture here, a culture that was sitting there. And you know, we started to see this particular rock art manifestation, but behind the rock art manifestation, there was something deeper and more strong and more fascinating, which is a culture. And this culture, we're just starting to study. I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg. I probably will die, and I won't finish to study this. It will deserve many, many experts, because they're experts for almost everything. I'm not an expert on rock art or lithics or ceramics, but I am sure that whenever I have the power and the time, I will bring experts to the land, to the ground, in order so they can study this and we get to know more about this group of people that now are filling up a gap in this area, because this area never was studied before. And this is the relevance. And this also, I take my time to thank you to trust me the first time you interviewed me, because I had an idea, but I wasn't too sure. I was astonished. I was amazed. But now I know what we're looking at. And do not have a doubt that we're in the face, we're in the front, we're at the beginning of something new that will give a sense to the region, because the Brazilians have the same, the Colombians have the same, the Guyanese have the same, but nobody ever thought or knows or knew where all these manifestations came. And now we are very close to say that Canaima was a zona zero. It was a zero point to developing of this culture. And that is what that particular magazine that you saw before is talking about. National Geographic is talking now about the new culture. We're presenting a new culture to the world. And you, my friend, have been part of it. You're part of the history. And I appreciate that.
And it's so cool. We are so proud of you. And thank you, Ben, for introducing us. Like I said, I read about you in his book, and then I was like, who's this Jose guy? And he goes, oh, I actually, you know, wrote to him. And so we, you know, got in touch with you and then had you on, thank God. And then now you're out here just in magazines and stuff, man, doing the thing. And again, you know, I saw the images in there. I'm like, that was debuted on the show. That was so cool. And now National Geographic's got him. I just think it's beautiful and amazing what you're doing, man. This is just absolutely incredible. We're proud to be a part of it. Well, did you want to kick off into our afterthought and talk about a few more things? I'm going to link all of this stuff so people can spend time with this presentation. It is in English, guys. And again, it's located down below. It's going to be the YouTube link, and then that will get you to his channel. Go subscribe, guys. Go subscribe.
Yeah. I want to make a last comment. If you move forward the presentation, because there is one. Keep going. That's another particular. Keep going.
Wow.
I keep going. There. Stop it there.
Whoa.
Okay. This is the initial results that we presented to the world. This is what I presented in Italy. And what I'm going to be presenting as well in Denver. I have been invited to Denver. A Society of American Archaeology is going to be in April this year. I will be in Denver. I hope I had the chance to go down and meet you whenever.
I might do a road trip, but if you're popping up through Texas, definitely come swing through.
Eventually, I will be in Denver in the very beginning of April. I think it's when this the Congress is it? Is it America? Is the Society of American Archaeology Congress? It's a 90. Let's see where it is.
And we know folks up there in Denver, so we can, you know, get you a little audience. If there's tickets available, can people come see you do that? Or is it an invite kind of a thing?
We will have a presentation there. I got lost. I have so many. Let me see if I find it. So many things in my.
I would definitely take a road trip up to Denver to see you do this live.
Denver.
That would be so cool. I love Colorado. They have legal pot.
Denver Congress. Denver Congress of the American Society of Archaeology. Denver.
This is just incredible. What a map.
Okay, I will talk to you about this map, because this is Denver is going to be April 23 to 27, 2025, this year. This is a 90th annual meeting of the Society for American Archaeology. And we will be presenting the new findings of this research in that Congress within the groups of rock art interest. We're very proud that we have invited there to present this. But this is the preliminary results of the studies we have been doing that you have been presenting already to your audience. And you can see the numbers from 5, 6, and 7. Those are the ones we are adding to the regional studies. And when you look at the styles that we're presenting in our research, when we compare to the rest of the region, you can tell it's the same. I mean, we're basically looking at the same thing. The same thing we're looking at, even the one in Brazil, the number one in Monte Alegre. Monte Alegre is the oldest dating Brazil has in terms of Paleolithic rock art. And the rock art there in Monte Alegre is so far away. It's like more than 1,000 kilometers away from Canaima about. And it's the same. So this is why we present now, this is a hypothesis. I mean, we're not quite sure. But according to our studies, the Canaima area was the ground zero, for the developing of this culture that produced the geometrical style or patterns. And these patterns are seen all over the place. And it's not difficult to realize because no matter the distance, I mean, for people in the past, going 1,000 kilometers was nothing. These people could walk 1,000 kilometers within months, you know, or less than months. I mean, they were people accustomed to walk and to move around. So whenever they moved, they took with them their technology and all the knowledge and their culture. And of course, they probably took their styles. So this is what we're presenting right now. And all the evidence point out that really Canaima was a ground zero. And we are still working the hypothesis, and we will, you know, we'll continue to smash into this because this is not easy. This is just beginning. But here is a glimpse of what we're talking about. And this is something very important to transmit, to connect, because before this area had nothing. We're the first ones now going into this research, and this is only one of the projects we have in our portfolio. And I am very proud that to share with you, with your audience. I'll be attending any question you people will have, any question that you may have too. And if you consider that we can meet in the near future, I'd be pleased to be back in your show.
You know, absolutely. And we did one of these hangouts, guys. It's up for free on Patreon, actually. So just go check it out there. It's one of these hidden episodes. And it's a hangout that we did with you and I. And the audience was there, too. I think Dave was in town with us, Dave Zed. And so he popped in the back as well. So if you guys want to check that out, it's from May 2023. But it's one of the newer posts over there on Patreon. It's completely free. And then we will definitely invite you for another one of those, my man, because we have a new amazing group of insiders that would just love to sit here and go over this with you, because this is just fascinating to all of us, man. It's beautiful. We love your work, brother. We openly receive this. So thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you, my friend. All the best. And I hope to see you when I go eventually to Denver.
Oh man, we're hanging out for sure. Because I mean, I'll take a trip up to Denver. That's a 20-hour drive. It's no big deal, like really. Because like those people back in the day, I'm from Texas, so we'll just drive for hours and hours and hours. I don't mind at all.
I love driving too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, then let me ask you this, and we're going to kick over to our afterthought. I've got a few points over here. I'm going to connect some interesting things that I think are going to be fascinating for your work here, but. Let's before we get into our afterthought here, I want to remind everyone that all of the things that we were talking about, all of his websites, his YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, the 3D modeling he's going to share with me. So I'm going to link that down below as well. Guys, go take a look at that thing. It's whimsical. And then you can pull up his other sites, too, like we did, and kind of compare where he was. It's an awesome way to do it. So I just want to ask you before we let you run here, man, and get into our afterthought, what gets you out of bed every morning? I feel this is going to be pretty obvious for you. But please, sir, what gets you out of bed every morning and keeps you moving forward?
That's a good question. But I have a single word response, and that is passion. I have a passion for everything I do. I enjoy life so much that I take advantage of the day so much that, you know, I don't want to go to bed. I don't want to go to bed. I have so many things, you know, to live for that going to bed is a waste of time. So passion is the answer. Whenever you have a passion for whatever you do, man, that's the answer. And passion will lead us to all of us, no matter what we look for. Passion will lead us to ourselves. It's passion what makes the difference. And that's it.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.